Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. A sign reading Americanitis in neon script on a red background with round white marquee light bulbs as a border is drawing patrons to one end of Building 6 at Massmoca in North Adams, Massachusetts. This particular space at the Contemporary Art Museum, which opened in 1999 and added this building in 2017, is called The Prow, and it's the first time it's held an exhibition. Allison Pebworth's Cultural Apothecary opened at the end of February in The Prow and features a tea service and several invitations to reflect on how you are feeling through emotion identification and surveys. Pebworth's work aims to inspire viewers to participate in reflective conversation about society and humanity. She spent her residency time with Massmoca very often in North Adams proper, hoping to encourage engagement in the community by modeling it. Allison Pebworth met me in the Cultural Apothecary, and we talked about her work. Allison Pebworth, congratulations on the exhibition, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for coming.
How does Cultural Apothecary come to be installed here in the prow of Building 6 at Massmoca?
Well, when I was invited to come here for a research and development residency for the Cultural Apothecary, I got to walk through the space and just see what place resonated with me. And immediately I could start seeing the apothecary in there, and the rivers, the conjunction of the rivers in this space kind of reinforced the whole concept of the Cultural Apothecary. And then the evidence of the factory itself that's in here, a resting place where you'd want to rest. So, and then I just proposed something and they took it. There was no backlog of people waiting to get into this space, so that was helpful.
When did you first meet Christy Edmonds and build the relationship that would bring you to North Adams?
It was a very quick build. I met her by chance, and we were just talking just casually about place and people and integrating, like, her, the town and the city, and I was talking about the Cultural Apothecary. And then I found out that she was the director of Massmoca. And then 6 months later, I was moving to North Adams from San Francisco.
That's quite a different climate, at least.
Yes, but I spent a winter here before I even moved here. So, and then moved back in the winter. So my first two seasons in North Adams was winter.
And you've survived it. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting.
How does the Cultural Apothecary stem from or relate to previous installations of yours? I'm sure it's in a great many ways.
Yeah. Well, the Cultural Apothecary is kind of, there's one stream of work that I've been doing that I've been working on since my whole life. And this is just the natural progression of that. So the other iterations that led up to this weren't gallery or museum shows. They were stuff I did on the road. So traveling in, on the road, creating a space in a 10 by 10 tent, you know, where it fostered interactions. So this was a really great opportunity to bring it into an institution where you could have conversations about what it is itself, but still have access to the street. Like, I still get to be a roadside attraction.
If you were to describe this to somebody completely unfamiliar, where would you begin describing it if you were forced to do so by, say, a radio person with a microphone at your exhibition right now?
Right. Well, I would say there are signs from the outside and from far reaches in the museum that will draw you down here, kind of our familiar neon, red neon, and there's an Americanitis sign. And I hope that just that word alone resonates with a lot of people, so I hope that's a curiosity that is. A trick of the roadside attraction is to pique your curiosity and make you want to come investigate. And from there, there's a survey station. But it's really a place to congregate where people can sit down, talk to strangers, and have this kind of third space that's undefinable. And that kind of puts your mind in an open place while your neurons are trying to figure out, what's this supposed to be? I love that space, and that's what I'm trying to create.
Could you, for those unfamiliar, and I did look it up to see if it was real or something that you had landed upon, but it was real, of course. Tell us what Americanitis is.
Americanitis is a 19th century neurological disorder. Neurasthenia might be a word that people know. Kind of the cure for neurasthenia is just nervous exhaustion. So for women, it would be the sanatorium. For men, the cure was to go out in nature. So William James and Roosevelt and Muir, all them suffered from Americanitis as an antidote. And for women, we're such hard workers, having to create a home. I used to say, what? Well, their cure should be nature too, but really rest is really what they literally needed from all the work. And then William James, I think, is credited with naming it Americanitis because it was the speeding up of time and that progress and capitalism that was making an industry, the Industrial Revolution, that was speeding up time and making us not know how to adjust. So there are eating disorders. They're all a whole list from premature baldness to nervous fatigue. I don't know, whatever. It kind of fell. Rexall put out an Americanitis elixir, you know, so it was recognized enough. Somebody wrote a book on it and traveled on the lecture circuit, but has since fallen out of use. But I immediately recognized it when I came across it and said, I suffer from Americanitis. I bet other people do too. And wondering what the contemporary causes and cures were.
And is the cultural apothecary a treatment or a cure in your biggest dreams for it?
The only cure is the one that you can come up with yourself. And so I guess it would have to, if I had, those are my two choices, I would say treatment.
You can choose a third option that you prefer if treatment isn't accurate or applicable.
It's an exercise. And I think it is part of the cure, is just talking to one another. We need to learn how to do that. And the space is not going to do that. It's up to us and what we do and what happens in here and what kind of effort people make. And that's, I don't know what that'll be. It's an experiment.
Our guest is Allison Pebworth. We are walking through her exhibition, Cultural Apothecary, at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts. Can you take me around and show me some of the elements of the exhibition?
Sure.
Does it have an official starting point as designed?
Well, I'm thinking most people are coming around this corner from Steve Locke and Amy Podmore, or around from Terrell, or coming around this way. So you see the big neon sign with the white lights all around that says Americanitis. So even from the far reaches, I know people are used to nothing really being down here except for a long table with some books. So I wanted to draw people and let them know that something is down here. And when you come in, to the left, there is a survey station. There's a sign that says, questions, what is Americanitis? And gives you some cabinet with background on the history. There's analog surveys, and there's digital surveys, which is a very hard thing for me to bring into the space. But anyway, they're very not traditional surveys.
What do these figures on the far wall from where we're standing right now, the red shapes against kind of a natural or cream background, what are those indicate? Why are they a part of the show?
I'm calling it cross-culture, and because it literally is crosses from different cultures, and they're all painted as a red cross. So the original red cross or red crescent is a symbol for neutrality. And also the medical system, you know, with the Red Cross. And the cross is a really, really early ancient symbol that goes through many different cultures. And so painting all these different crosses of different cultures is setting up what I hope to be here, this neutral ground for different cultures to coming together. And I purposely placed them alongside the windows, because out the windows, that's where the two rivers of the Hoosick come together. So it feels like it's not just something I want to cultivate here, but it's represented in the outdoors too. So I love that, going back and forth to the outdoors and coming back in.
Let's walk over here. This looks to be dealing with humors and heart. But that's just a first glancery guess. Tell me about this place.
I love humors. This is a very old term. And I love just the humor and humors, too. That's great. Yes, this is the Armored Heart Cabinet. And so I was kind of thinking of it as a very loose interpretation of the limbic system and how fear causes us to armor our hearts. It's a protective skill, so it's also placing the heart and the internal organs in a natural setting. There's a rock, a hard rock for the heart, and there's lizards and snake and a mouse in the lungs. And so also thinking part of the road to our cure is to realize we're not just this separate being. We're connected to the rest of the world, not to just each other. You know, this separation is what's killing us. You know, it's the more connections we can make, not with just each other, but with the world itself, is where our cure is. And so thinking about armoring is a fear mechanism, and some of our fears are unfounded. Some are legitimate, and we should know when what we need to do to protect ourselves, but to look underneath our fears is maybe the source of our ailment too. Then there's these, I like to think of things as tools. I like thinking of art. I love that era in like pre-Renaissance, when everything wasn't so separated. You know, their art and science and metaphysics were all drawn in together, and what that looked like and how it hit you on different levels, not just an intellectual level, but an embodiment level as well. So thinking of that and thinking of tools, how I'll use this tool, I have ideas, but it won't be an active part of the show, maybe just a special event sort of thing. Then I have all these four symbols of hearts, kind of stone hearts that have different ways of nature breaking through a crack. One little weed had the power to break through a crack. You know, the molten lava underneath that can crack the hardened surface of the earth. And crystals, the mysterious, amazing things that can grow underneath, under all the pressure. You know, but when you crack it open, what is revealed there? And then fungal systems. So those are ways of contemplating, you know, if we can identify what is bothering, what is closest to those things, you know, and contemplating on the natural element takes you out of yourself, for one, which is the number one thing, but also gives you clues.
Let us approach the bar over here, which is where I had, before we began taping, some delicious tea that is a active and will be changing element of the show. Tell me about the tea service.
The tea service, what's important to me is Americanitis was first put out by the Rexall drugstore, or pharmaceutical thing that was I saw was from Boston. But my mom grew up at a Rexall drugstore, and growing up in the woods where I was, I always fantasized about the drugstore counter soda fountain. And when I travel across the country, and I've traveled across the country solo for years at a time, and the counter, the fixed stool counter, is so important for single people to feel comfortable sitting down. And then you can't move your chair away. You just naturally talk to the person next to you. And so I wanted to cult a space in here where you could sit down and talk to your neighbors. I love interactions with strangers. I want to cultivate that for others as well. And so the tea, I chose an anti-inflammatory tea, which is turmeric because it's beautiful. It's like liquid sunshine, you know, so for the color and for being anti-inflammatory for a lot of different reasons. And then I worked with local herbalists at Wild Soul River to make it bring the recipe that I had into more New England. So we added willow, the flexibility of willow, and birch, and sea salt from the Atlantic, and maple, and so just a tasty beverage to set you up in the space, warming, anti-inflammatory.
Delicious also, which is, you know, just a bonus on top of everything. There are people staffed here serving tea, and they have to be, you know, like sort of trained and they're part of the exhibition. Are they Mass MoCA staff, or how are they appointed?
They are. They're museum attendants, and they're amazing. I can't believe, because we weren't finished installing till the day before, so doing trimming is a lot of, and figuring out the tea and stuff. I mean, feeling numb after the getting everything up and trying to think where everything goes. When I walked in and walked back here and saw the MAs just handling the whole thing like pros, that is when I first felt something, was just like seeing it activated and how well they took that on, not being servers or something. So yes, they're provided by the museum.
They do a fantastic job conveying the, you know, the feeling, telling you about the tea, and then they ask you to participate, if you wish, in two other parts of the show. Tell me how the red marble and the red, blood droplet, maybe, will be used in the show.
Yeah, so I wanted different points of entering the thing. So if you have a moment to sit, you know, taken away from taking your attention back from the thieves that take it on your phone every minute, and to look inward and to just, I was just asking people what's been sitting on their heart lately. So we have a heart tally. I like just seeing, you know, we have all this we believe in these surveys and tallies and stuff, which is important, but also funny too. And I just wanted to see a physical representation of what that would look like if people identified what's been on their heart lately. I think we're still figuring that. There's a lot of gratitude, hope, and joy. And I hope that's true, what's been sitting on people's heart lately, but I don't know if it was what's sitting on their heart at the moment on their day off when they're getting to come to a museum with their friends, right, or whether it's truly what's been on there. But all emotions, the main ones that affect your heart, are on the tally. I'll be tallying those from time to time. I want to have a little logbook. I want to see how that, I love just data, seeing data, mm-hmm, and playing with it to the physical thing. And then the droplets, this comes on a little tray, and it's, you can either choose to do this or not. And then the droplet is asking to look under all those emotions, and what are those buried dreams, or maybe not so buried, maybe what are the dreams you're working on? What are some childhood dreams? What are some aspirations or just buried things that you would like to see come to light, to put them on the droplets, and I'm going to be affixing them to the heart in the center, and so they'll be dripping down over time, so it'll be an accumulative piece. And I like that too, just seeing the accumulation of data and people's participation shaping the space.
Tell me about the heart in the center. It's a big heart.
It is. It's a 7 foot tall, kind of flat construction, kind of in three parts, heart that's been stained. You still see the texture of the wood below it, and then on the center of it, and it's pieced together, and in the center is an acorn cut out. And so another way of tying in the nature, you know, like I still have to work on making that prominent. It's all a work in progress. But the whole heart is outlined in red neon, and it's hanging high above the space because it's a two-story space and even a balcony that looks over. So it really is literally the heart of the space when there's a lot of things going on around the perimeter. But at night, this glows out all the windows. And I know there's people in town that have never been into the museum before that have grown up here even, you know, and so I want them to know I'm thinking of them when they drive by, you know, and I hope somehow, you know, that'll draw in more curiosity anyway to what's going on.
So I have to ask you one more question on behalf of some of my best friends who are introverted people. What do you want them to do? How do you want them to feel when they come in here? Because you're encouraging so much communication with strangers, but that can be really hard for folks.
Oh my God, I'm a hermit. I'm a hermit with a social calling. It's taken me this long, just, you know, I've practiced being social, and people would call this social practice, but I literally was practicing being social. So I hope it'll be a comfortable space that you can sit down on the bar, you know, that's, it's a big wide stool, it's comfortable. There's people that can talk to you. I think I hope it'll be a comfortable space. I mean, all of this is me, you know, I'm also creating things for the 8-year-old me that was morbidly shy, as my mom used to say, you know, so so who knows? I don't know. Just come. You got to do it. It's a place to practice where there's no wrong, because there is no right. There is nothing. This is the third space that I want. You know, nobody, it has no clear definition except to be here and to engage with each other.
It doesn't need my endorsement, but I do just love it. Thank you very much for telling me more about it, Allison. It's been wonderful to meet you.
Oh my God. Thank you for coming and taking an interest in talking today.
Allison Pebworth's Cultural Apothecary, an evolving exhibition at Mass MoCA curated by Evan Garza, is on view now. To learn more, visit massmocha.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.